It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, Wisconsin has a national treasure right in our backyard, the Ice Age National Scenic Trail. We'll talk to an outdoor writer about how to enjoy it, even in winter.
First, as people around the country settle into holiday mode, presidential campaigns are gearing up and strategizing for the most important month of the campaign so far. When we come back from winter break, we'll have less than a month before the Iowa caucuses.
And that's when, despite the countless polls, we will actually see how primary voters feel about the candidates. It's time for our weekly look at the latest in national politics with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538.
This week, Donald Trump took a swing at Hillary Clinton, Lindsey Graham dropped out of the race, and a budget showdown has been avoided for yet another year. Harry, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me back.
So Donald Trump has been tangling with just about everybody. He's been egalitarian in that, and this time it was Hillary Clinton. There was an off-color remark there, some interpreted as that he directed at her, and she has opted not to respond. How come?
I think that this is just a very wise strategy because Donald Trump loves media attention. You know, we ran a study here which basically tried to predict how high the different candidates would be in the polls based upon their favorable ratings and their media coverage. And it turns out that Trump is as high as he is despite not in the Republican race, despite not having great favorable ratings, because he receives so much media attention. And Trump makes these remarks, I think, in large part because he knows that the media is going to go cover them. And Clinton has decided, you know what, I'm not going to give you the time of day on this. I'm not going to, say, give you this media coverage. So I'm just not going to respond to it. And it has, in my opinion, is a fairly smart strategy.
Yeah, but it didn't really work out well for, say, Jeb Bush, who endured all the slings and arrows that Trump shot his way, didn't really say anything. And then Trump sort of said, look at this guy, he's low energy. And then that became the running narrative.
Well, I would say that he tried to respond to those. Unfortunately for Jeb Bush, he didn't do a very good job of responding. You know, he tried to go on the attack against Trump, and then Trump would kind of shut him down, and Bush just didn't have the energy. I guess he was, quote-unquote, very low energy to fight back, versus someone like Ted Cruz, who Trump had gone after, and Cruz basically said, nah, we're buddy-buddy. And Trump kind of looked around and said, what the heck am I supposed to do with that? And that's, I think, part of the reason right now that Ted Cruz is very competitive with Trump in Iowa, in fact, leading Trump in Iowa, and decently competitive with him in New Hampshire. And those are the states that we're watching here at 538, not so much the national polling.
Well, Clinton had said that she would be more direct in calling out sexism during this campaign compared with her 2008 campaign. How come, you know, she's not making good on that with this?
I think, you know, Trump is a different case of from everything else, right? When you hear, when the Clinton campaign has heard some sexist remarks or what were deemed by them to be at least somewhat sexist remarks from people who were supporting Bernie Sanders, they went ahead and called those out. But I think Trump is so unique in that Trump just doesn't care. He's not PC. He doesn't care if he makes a remark that people don't necessarily like. He recognizes the way that he stays atop the polls is by having a lot of media cover him. And so Clinton, in my opinion, is being very smart in saying, I am not going to dignify what Trump has said about, you know, whatever it was that he was talking about, in which he referenced her. And she will only go after him when there are policy differences. And I think that's something key, right? What she wants to do is say, here, the Republicans are really extreme, and Trump may be an illustration of that, but we'll talk about his policies and not so much his personal remarks.
And we're going to move on from Donald Trump, but this does lead into a bigger discussion about polling. And Donald Trump is still on top and maybe even in some cases gaining ground. And we know the polls at this point are not necessarily predictive of what's going to happen in the primary. But what do the current polls tell us about Donald Trump?
Well, I think that this is a very interesting situation insofar as that Donald Trump is clearly doing very well in these national primary polls. So CNN had a poll out today, and he was at his highest point ever in the CNN poll in the high 30s. There have been some polls with him in the low 40s. But we don't vote in primaries all on one day. There isn't a national primary day. Primaries and caucuses are sequential. So we have Iowa on the 1st of February, and then about a week later we have New Hampshire. And we know from the past that if we want to know how those primaries and caucuses are going to vote, we look at the state polling from those states. And the state polling from those states indicates that Donald Trump is not anywhere and near as a strong a position in those states as he is nationally. And historically speaking, those two states have been fairly predictive of what eventually happens in the primary. So that's why we're looking at the state polling, and the state polling doesn't paint nearly as rosy a picture for Trump.
We're taking a look at the latest in national politics with Harry Enten from 538. And Harry, you recently sat down with On the Media to give listeners a lesson about how to read the polls, how to make the most of the polls heading into 2016. What are some of the top pieces of information you want to share?
Sure. So I think one of them is what I basically just shared, which was we pay attention in primaries to the state polls, state by state, than the national primary polls. That's key. And we should also keep in mind that the state polls at this point, while they may be more predictive of the outcomes in Iowa and New Hampshire, they're still not all that predictive. There's a wide margin of error. So remember, at this point, John Edwards and John Kerry in the 2004 Iowa caucus polling were third and fourth, and they ended up being a clear first and second when the voting actually occurred. So I think that's one thing. I think the other things that you would also want to keep in mind as we're looking at the primary specifically is remember that the turnout for these primaries are going to be very, very low, especially for the Iowa caucus. So we want to really have a good idea when we're looking at the polls that we're looking at what we call likely voters. And specifically, if we can get really in-depth, know that these people have a history of voting in the primaries and caucuses. So something called list samples, which are basically we can look and say, hey, these people actually have voted in the past. And then the other thing, as we look kind of more towards the general election, is to keep in mind that the general election polls at this point are not all that predictive. In fact, not really predictive at all. We really want to wait until after the primary season and then really until after the national conventions to look at those. And if someone has a clear 4 or 5 point lead after the national conventions, then they're probably going to win the general election.
And do we want to check out who it is that is conducting the poll? Does that matter?
Sure. I mean, obviously, you know, if you hear that a poll has been done by an organization that you've heard of, say, you know, ABC or NBC or CBS, then those polls are probably going to be more reputable than the polls that are done by organizations you have never heard of, because good polls cost a lot of money, and places that you probably haven't heard of don't have that type of money to spend on the good polling. So we want to look at those polls that are by organizations that we generally know, and those are generally done by what are called live interviewers, so that someone actually has to dial you up and you talk with someone on the phone, and they can call cell phones, and there's pretty good chance that everybody in the population has an equal chance of being able to participate in those polls versus polls that may have been done over the internet, which participants in those tend to voluntarily sign up, so they're not exactly a random sample. And those polls, at least in primaries, haven't really been tested, so we want to be a little wary of reading too much into those numbers.
So as a guy who studies polls, who's into the statistics, what are you particularly excited about when we get closer to Iowa?
I think the real thing that I'm going to be excited about is to see if there's any candidate that kind of seems like he has or she has momentum. Because we know in primary polls that momentum is a real thing. You know, I'm generally kind of worried about reading too much into a trend line in which one or two polls may be outliers. But what we saw in 2012 was Rick Santorum, for instance, really rising at the last minute. Or if you look back to 2008 on the Republican side, John McCain rising at the last minute heading into New Hampshire. So we want to see if there are any candidates that have any momentum going into Iowa and New Hampshire, especially, where right now there's Trump, who is leading, but has kind of been stuck in the mid-20s, and there's been some question about whether one of his opponents will be able to coalesce the Donald Trump opposition vote, and we'll see if one of those candidates has momentum. So I'm looking for one candidate who really has momentum heading into the first two contests.
Well, right now we're down one campaign. On Monday, Lindsey Graham dropped out of the race, and I guess you could look at it either way. One is, you know, why did he stay in this long? And the other, why did he drop out this close to Iowa?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this was a case where Lindsey Graham was really going nowhere. He never really got above 1% in any of the early states, even in South Carolina, where he's from. His net favorable rating among Republican voters was really bad. It was negative, which you really rarely see a Republican having a negative net favorability rating among Republicans. So I think he recognized that he had no chance. But there are a few reasons why he dropped out. One was because I think he recognized he had no chance. It was the last day for him to not appear on the South Carolina ballot. I don't think he wanted to be embarrassed in his own home state. And I think the other thing, which is key, is that even though he wasn't doing so well in the polls, he was holding up some establishment support from the party actors, his fellow senators, who didn't really want to embarrass him by endorsing another candidate. And so now he's able to free them up to potentially endorse someone, say, like Marco Rubio.
So moving on to the Congress, to the spending bill, President Obama did sign that spending bill this past weekend, and it funds the government through the end of September 2016. And that, as you know, is just a bit over a month before that 2016 presidential election. So do you think there could be any end-of-the-road drama there right before the big election day?
Well, I think it almost depends on whether people want there to be drama. You know, if there needs to be some sort of, let's say Republicans were trailing big time heading into Election Day 2016 or a month or two before, then maybe there would be this sort of urge to say, look, nothing else is working for us, so let's try something new. Let's try maybe shut down the government. Let's try and, you know, shake up the globe a little bit, the snow globe up a little bit. But if the Republicans, for instance, are leading or it's a tight race, I don't think any side really wants to risk looking bad to the American public. So, you know, we avoided the shutdown this year. We have a new speaker in place in Paul Ryan, who supposedly has a pretty decent relationship with Harry Reid. Now, obviously, in this day and age of polarized Washington, who can really say who has a good relationship with the other side? But they supposedly have a pretty good relationship. I would find it highly doubtful that either side would be willing to shut down the government right before a presidential election, because usually the side that's deemed to be responsible for the shutdown usually suffers in the polls.
Harry, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
That was Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time to talk the latest in national politics.